Accession number 6106, reel 3.
Mrs. Anderson, reel 3. Was there a daily routine?
Well, not really. We got up, and then one of us would go to the kitchen to collect, in a large thermos flask and a small thermos flask, boiling water. And the congee that they made, we had sometimes, but only sometimes, because really, we all found it all but inedible. Then we came back, and with luck, by that time, the chatty was going. The boy who brought it over the... I saw him coming out of our window, and, oh, here's Al coming along. And he brought it in. We boiled the water that was in the thermos hot and made tea. There was plenty of green tea. Fortunately for me, I like it. And that we had, and some of the Melba toast, and bread with peanut butter on it or something to eat. And I'm sure it was at 9 o'clock that we went out to stand in line. I think it was 9. And wait for the guards to come along and take our numbers. Then, after that, you did what you had to do in the house. Washing was a great problem.
I mean
washing clothes. Well, there was no hot water and there was very little soap. And there was nothing to encourage you to be clean. And I had, because I was a teacher, I had a class, but it wasn't every day because there were more teachers than children. And one of the things I did was stand in the line, the serving line, giving out the potatoes with a ladle. It was quite a worrying job because you had to be so careful that you gave exactly the same to each plate.
Can you remember any occasions where problems arose?
No, not special ones, but they frequently did. And then there were always people. If there was any left in the pot, there was second helpings. Most of the people got their plates, took their rations. You had a little ticket for your rations, which you gave in, a chip. And for instance, we could go with the three of them and a tray and collect three rations. But some of the people stayed, had their meal in the dining room, and then if there was any left over, then they had second helpings.
Mm-hmm. And after lunch, how would the day continue?
Well, I think I told you before, we played bridge. There was nothing to do. There were evening amusements. There was, in the cold weather, the Scottish dancing. There was one big room, and there were ordinary dances. A lot of amateur dramatics. We had a woman who was a teacher in Shanghai, and she had a very lovely voice, and she got up all the Gilbert and Sullivans, except the Mikado, we had, practically, I think. And that kept a lot of people busy, because there was not only the rehearsing for it, there was finding clothes for it, and they all had to be sort of made out of what you had with you.
The killing of time must have been quite a problem.
Well, it was.
But how else did you manage to deal
with
it?
Well, there was a library. I read all of Dickens, because they had Dickens there, and having hated it as a child, I grew to like it very much.
Yes. Yes, how much work did you personally have to do on
the camp? For the community? I didn't do more than 2 hours a day. There were things that had to be done, like I do remember one occasion that we were all called out to help to dig up what it was, I can't remember either. We had to dig up a rubbish heap. And that was very nasty. They called the women in for that. Normally only the men did that. But on one occasion we were all called in. And that was very hard. But it was our own people that called us, not the Japanese.
Why were you digging up a rubbish heap?
I think it was beginning to smell or something.
Ah, right.
I really can't...
As far as you were concerned, a major part of your work was the school. How was the school organized? Could you compare it with the school you were working at in Shanghai?
Oh, no, you couldn't. The books were limited, everything was limited. You didn't even have a room to yourself. But you had very few children. All the classes were in one room. And you can imagine that wasn't very easy. Oh, no. But we did the best we could for the children, and at least they got individual attention.
Well, you had two daughters there of school age.
Ah, no. Joy didn't consider herself a full age. She said she wasn't going to teach. Now, I can tell you what she did as a chore. She helped the dentist, and he wasn't really a dentist. We had a number of doctors and parsons because most of them were missionaries. And there was no dentist, but this was a doctor, Dr. Morgan, a very nice man too. And he said, oh, I'll have a stab at it. And there was a chair, and he did. And because the girls liked him, three of the girls were his assistants. When I say girls, she was then about 16, 15 or 16. And she learned how to scale teeth. And she did that. It was rather interesting. Everybody got their teeth black in camp. And I'm sure it was the tea without any milk in it that did that. And so we needed lots of scaling.
How did you do for clothing in the camp? Was that adequate?
No. We had what we went in with. The only thing that was seriously bad, except that they got worn out and shabby, were shoes. And shoes really were bad. They put on wooden soles, some of them, and really you'd be surprised how quickly wood wears. It didn't last at all. And it made an awful clatter around the place, but... anyway, you had something to keep you out of the mud.
Mm-hmm. What kind of clothes would you wear in the summer?
In the summer? Oh, thin dress. Whatever you had.
And in the winter?
Everything you can put on. Layers upon layers. I had a fur coat. And a friend of mine said, do you put it on? Do you go to bed in it? I said, no, but I have it on the bed when I'm in it. It was really cruelly cold.
Yes.
It didn't last long, but it was terrible while it lasted.
Was laundering or the repair of clothes a problem?
Oh, great problem.
Why?
Yes. Well, there wasn't enough soap, and there was never any hot water, except what you could boil on your chatty, and you couldn't boil much. That's why a thermos flask was such an asset, because you could get boiling water from the kitchen. But to make it into tea, you had to boil it again. You know, when it came, it wasn't boiling, it was hot water. But that was a great help. And because the fan... you had to fan these things all the time to keep them going.
When you had to replace items of clothing, was there means of doing it?
Oh, no, there was no means of doing it. No, you couldn't replace...
Not even through your contacts or through
the Red Cross?
Yes,
of course. You could have done through your contacts if you'd had contacts. Would you like me to tell you about the letters that we wrote and received?
Yes, you got some clothing then from the Red Cross.
Well, it wasn't really clothing. It was really sheets. A Chinese bedsheet has a coloured border around it. And I even had some to bring out with me, because they weren't really very useful, except for people with small children. The Japanese woman who had four little girls was given one of these sheets with a bright coloured border. And the very next day, her four little girls were in nice new dresses. And, would you believe it, people grumbled at her. She wasn't given that, to make clothes for her little girls and make them look pretty. But I think she's just showed her initiative.
Yes, that's very impressive, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Right.
It certainly was to me.
Now, there were other ways in which you filled time, or one of which you mentioned to me was classes. What kind of classes were set up?
Well, I tried to learn Chinese, but I found it very difficult and gave up. There were plenty of people to teach you anything. One man had a great interest in astrology. And I tried that too, but I couldn't see the different stars. And that was very interesting.
What other subjects were available?
Well, I don't know that there were any other subjects available, apart from bridge, which was endless. But there were very interesting lectures. The two of the missionaries were in Inner Mongolia, and they gave very interesting talks about Mongolia. And I must say, anything you could go to, you went to, because it was something else to think about.
Mm-hmm.
There was this Highland dancing, and that was to keep you warm. You didn't want to do it in the summer.
Yes. Did religion play an important part in the life of the camp?
There were parsons of every denomination. I'm quite sure that nothing was left out. We went in with Church of England, Nonconformist and Roman Catholic. But because our camp hadn't been quite full to begin with, any set of missionaries that came down from up country was put into our camp. And they also had their religions.
Hmm.
I don't think I'd say it made a great difference in my life, but my younger daughter was confirmed there. And they were very nice, all these people.
Mm. Right.
Oh, yes.
Did you receive any letters from home during this period?
I got this 20-word things. And each month we were allowed to write 20 words. And you've no idea how difficult it is to think of 20 words to say. You could say a lot, or you could say less, but 20 words is one of these inhibiting things. And you got 20 words back. I had letters every month from my parents. 20 words. And in 20 words you say all well, or not so well, or something of that kind.
How important were these contacts?
Oh, they were very important. You didn't feel you were absolutely out on the limb by yourself.
Now, apart from the letters, did you have any other contact with or news of the outside world?
Yes, we did. We had a newspaper. And I think it must have been translated. The translation was hung up in our washroom. There was a washroom where there were two irons in that washroom, but you didn't often get a go at them. And you read the news every day. Oh, yes. And I'm quite sure if they'd given us bad news, we shouldn't have believed them. And I think we'd have been right, because I think the war, by the time they interned us, the war had taken a turn for the better as far as we were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And endless rumours. There was, I think I told you that some American men had a room which absolutely their window was onto the main road. And always they came with a story. A German woman on a bicycle told us And the Times, the German woman on the bicycle, told them the war was over. It's nobody's business whether there was really a woman there or whether they just made it up to give us a bit of cheer. I don't know, but oh, we heard it.
Yes, and were there any other sources of news to you?
No, I don't think so.
Was there a radio in the camp?
Yes, there was a radio, but I don't think it was awfully efficient, and it was very well hidden, but I think it was found. It was only at first we heard radio news. No, I think it was discovered before very long.
Right.
I have told you about our black market, haven't I?
No, you told me last time, but we haven't recorded that.
Well,
so
would you like to hear
yes,
about
I would
that?
Yes, I would very much like to hear about that.
As I say, I don't know how these two men happened to get put on the main road. The vast majority of the men were on a lane. And Chinese being what they are and always having an eye on a little extra money, things changed hands over that wall, and it was wonderful. I hadn't sold everything of mine. Mind you, I never sold my engagement ring or my wedding ring, but I had some other little bits of jewellery, and they went over the wall. And very good value I got for them. A friend of mine in camp had been given the best possible advice. The Chinese women, when they save money, they always buy a little bit of gold wire, such as is put into an ear.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd been told to buy these Chinese earrings, and she had them. And she was able to give one, and then another one, and got value for them all the way. As I say, I had one or two bits and pieces of metal, and they went. And I did very well. I told you how important a thermos flask was. Well, one frosty morning, both our thermos flasks broke at the same moment.
Disaster.
It was a disaster. Mm. It was something for tears. Well, a friend who I had over there in the quarters took them for me. And in less than no time, a couple of days, they were back. And that was value.
That's excellent.
Yes, it was. But, and hooch they got over there too. But that wasn't so often, I think. I only got in for one of those parties, but I did get into one of them.
Sorry, which parties?
Hooch parties.
What were they?
Drink.
Uh-huh.
Don't you call it hooch?
Yes, I've heard the expression.
That was what it was called. And what it was, I don't know, but it was very potent.
Yes, were these parties for special occasions, or
yes.
Why were they held?
Special occasions.
What, Christmas, Easter, that kind of thing?
Yes, that kind of thing, but not Easter. I should think Christmas, but the one that I was at was one of the ends of the war parties. And we still had restrictions after the war was over.
Yes. Now, during this long period of internment, what was morale like in the camp? I mean, what sort of things got you down?
Oh, the squalor.
Go on.
I'm sure it was that that got us down more than anything. I expect the lack of food made a big difference too, but I'm sure living in dirt all the time is what got you down. They did get us down, but less than you'd have expected.
What happened? I mean, what were the symptoms? When you say it did get you down, in what kind of way?
Oh, you felt you couldn't be bothered doing anything. Our hut had to be scrubbed once a week, and my elder daughter did it. And she was very good. She did it.
Yes.
I always felt gypped that I hadn't got a man. And she was very good.
Yes.
There were so many things you had to do to keep yourself even reasonably clean. We had to make... I told you about this chatty. We were given coal dust. And I learned how to make coal balls. You have to put the certain amount. I quite enjoyed it. You know, the mud pie. You have to put a certain amount of mud in with them, a certain amount of water, and 2 dessert spoonfuls, and you put them together, and there's your mud ball, and it dries out in the sun. And that gives you fuel for your chatty. And sticks, you need sticks to anything that, any tree blown down. Mm. I thought at one time I should never pass a bit of wood lying on the ground.
Yes.
And when we came out, I know what poverty is, you see, and a lot of people don't. When we came out and I saw kids in Shanghai, little urchins with an empty tin, scrabbling in the... I knew what they were looking for. And I didn't feel sorry for them. They were looking for clinkers, and when they found them, they'd have been pleased. It's all what you're used to, what you've got.
Yes. We were talking about morale and about the sort of things that got you down or bucked you up.
Yes.
Did any problems arise for you personally as a widow with 2 daughters to bring up in these particular difficulties, circumstances?
Touch wood, I was lucky.
Yes.
They didn't.
Yes.
One, the daughter of 2 friends of mine, the husband and wife were both there. She got pregnant and she went to the hospital and had an abortion. And it seems to me a pity that she did, because they married. But things were different in those days.
Mm. When did liberation first become a real prospect? What were the signs of it approaching?
Well, you see, the war in Europe finished first, and that we heard. Ah, now that, I think, was when I had that hooch party, when there was the war in Europe was over. I think that's the one that I got invited to. And I was with a lot of young things. The friend who did the black marketing for me, he was the one who was a sort of between the ages. He was younger than I was and older than my daughters. And he it was who brought the hooch to our hut. And we had a party. And I think it must have been that. I think that probably is what it was. Mm.
But what events occurred to make you feel that the end was inside?
Well, I think we heard that the war in Europe was over.
And then what happened in the camp?
Well, things got worse in the camp.
In what
Very
ways?
Much worse.
In what ways?
Well, not in our camp. The food got less. But in one of the camps, they started moving this was the men's camp. They started moving the men up to Pekin. And from Pekin, they would be sent to Tinsin and moved over to Japan. And that was a terrifying thought. So, they really got much worse for the last few months. And when people say how dreadful the atomic bomb was, I know it was dreadful. But at least it saved us. It won't be as dramatic to say our lives, but a great deal of misery.
How did liberation come about at ASH camp for you personally and your fellow?
Made very little difference.
Yes, but what happened? I mean, one day you were the prisoners of the Japanese and another you weren't.
So another we weren't.
How did the change take place?
The Japanese, we stayed in the camp. We had to stay in the camp. And this, I think, is interesting because, A, the houses and residents were all occupied by Japanese, and B, we had no money of getting any. And I had some traveller's checks, and I still had them. I kept them all through camp. They were never taken from me. And I thought that the Americans would have given me money for them. The Americans set themselves up in there were no British in at the beginning. They set themselves up in one of the hotels. And I made a great effort to go and see one of the men in charge. And I thought it was only reasonable that these were American travellers' checks. It was only reasonable that they should cash some, but they wouldn't. They said, no, that isn't our business. That's a civilian matter. And, of course, red tape. And it was a civilian matter. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't get any money. The reason I particularly wanted money was because the girls were going... I put the girls down to go on the first emigration ship. I was going to stay because I knew I could get a job in Shanghai, and I wanted to stay behind and get one. But I didn't want the girls there, the place full of Japanese military, which were much more dangerous than the men we'd had in camp with us. But that was the way. And when the Japanese gave up, our commandant made a very dignified speech. Really very dignified.
To what effect?
That he'd lost the war, and now we were in the hands of the Allies.
Mm.
What happened to them, I don't know.
Mm. Did the Japanese were presumably there one day and gone the next?
Yes.
Who took over responsibility for the
committee.
Camp? The committee, yeah.
Yes.
And was the camp wound up fairly quickly?
No, it went on for months and months and months.
Uh-huh.
It couldn't be wound up because of these reasons that I've told you about. I should like to tell you how the Americans brought goods into the camp before they'd actually taken Shanghai. Aeroplanes, and they let out these parachutes, and beautiful they looked coming down, all different colours, reds and blues and greens, and they looked, you saw them coming, but we didn't get any benefit from them. They didn't land in our camp. They landed outside, and they landed all over the place, and they landed with such force that the drums burst, and all the goodies ran over the streets into the mud, and the Chinese were starving by that time, and they all rushed and got, and a little bit of mud with Del Monte peaches didn't worry them. It was really terrible.
Mm-hmm.
One of the camps had a sick bay, and one of them landed just on the sick bay and all but missed a woman in bed with something the matter with her. Well, of course, it would have killed her. And one of the camp wits drew a cartoon, killed by kindness. There was the parachute coming down. But that was one of the things they shouldn't have done. It was waste of good food. But I think they thought we were really much more starving than we were. We weren't starving. By that time, we'd had some of the Red Cross parcels. In fact, we'd had a lot of the Red Cross parcels. And when the Japanese really came in, we got their K rations. And the
When the Japanese came
no,
in?
No, when the Americans. Did I say Japanese? Mm. Oh. When the Americans really came in, they gave us K rations. And we thought the K rations were too marvellous for words. But of course, that's what the Americans have all the time.
How did you and the girls finally split up and part company in Shanghai?
Well, I had decided that the best thing would be for them to come home to England, where I had a very good brother who would look after them. And I put them down, and they were put, because they were unaccompanied girls, they were put onto the hospital ship as being slightly less tough than the others. And anyway, one of the padres, much to my elder daughter's annoyance, offered to look after them, and I was very pleased. But they had no clothes, you see. That was one of the troubles. And I think I told you I put a trunk into... It came up to... We were allowed to get them out, and mine came, and it was heavy, so I knew it hadn't been rifled. Some of them had. And some of the houses had been stripped of everything, and mine wasn't. Touch wood. Perhaps I'm lucky. And... Anyhow, it was locked, and of course I hadn't got my keys. But one of the inmates of the camp, a buddy of ours, did it with a hairpin in no time at all. Didn't take him any trouble. He was well accustomed to that sort of thing. And I had there some material which a friend had given me before we went into camp. And a Chinese tailor came in and made them winter coats. So at least they had winter coats to go with. And there's where the Red Cross gave parcels. That plane stopped at Attica, which is a port on the Red Sea. And there they gave them clothes, and they had marvellous clothes. Most of them were willing, would fit a number 40, but anyway, they got them. And when they got to England, anything that didn't fit them was very welcome to people who had clothing coupons. Mm. Even by the time I went, they were glad of clothing coupons. But the girls had to go on a truck. The Americans brought in jeeps, and if you were lucky and knew someone with a jeep, you got a jeep. And I was lucky and got some rides in jeeps. But to take the internees... Oh, damn that phone. To take the internees to the port, and it was about 4 miles, they had to go in a truck, and they had to stand up in the truck. And their goods and chattels went with them in that truck. And that's how they went.
I see. Mm-hmm. Good.